Hello, I'm looking forward to this podcast. I'm quite excited. I asked you to give some suggestions for things you thought it might be good to talk about. And, you know, was you expecting, you know, mouthpiece sizes, yellow brass bells or red brass bells or what it was like playing the New Year's Day concert? But there was some fantastic stuff in here. There's some really great stuff in here. Thank you so much. I'm going to dive right in with one from Dave. Dave says, talking about linking physical fitness to mental health and the effect this may have on students. Well, Dave, never mind the effect he might have on students. What about the effect he might have on teachers and actually the population in general? Let me tell you about what I do about my health. Couple of things before we go any further. And it might sound like the usual disclaimers, of course you have to talk to your doctor about it. No, this is genuinely, this is my opinion. This is what I do in my life, and you might like to try it too. First of all, I don't think there's any point doing anything health-wise if you expect a benefit of it in any other way than you're going to feel better. The way I live my life, my diet, my fitness regime, it's all there so that I feel more comfortable in my life and then I'm happier. And I feel I've found a formula that really works for me. So let's kind of pick through this a little bit. Well, fitness, let's just look at the fitness side of things. When I'm home, 5 days of the week, I get up, run up the hill to the fitness studio. Fitness studio is, depending on how fit I am, 3 minutes 55 seconds up the hill or 4 minutes 30. I run up there. I'm not a long distance runner. I'm a sprinter. I've got the sort of the body of a sprinter. I can run pretty fast still, even though I'm nearly 60. And I run up there, and then I run up the five flights of stairs, and I do 15 minutes on an elliptical trainer to keep for the cardio side of things, and then I do about 15 minutes of weights, and then I run down the hill again, and then I get in the swimming pool or a cold shower. So in the winter, I'm getting into, at the moment, it's in European money, it's about 8 degrees, so it's pretty cold. And I try and get in there for about 6 minutes. Actually, in the summer, I've got a bit of a problem with that now because the cold showers are not really cold. So I'm looking at converting a chest freezer in my basement so I can have it running at 1 degree. So just above freezing through the summer. And why do I do that? It makes me feel good. It's a bit tough to start with. And, you know, there's all this kind of stuff with Wim Hof or whatever. And I don't do that stuff. I've tried the breathing. I don't really do it. I just know I feel happier. I feel more positive. I feel fresher if I've had a cold shower or I've got in the cold swimming pool. I mean, in the winter, literally, I break through the ice and go and sit in there. There's a lot of things there that I can say, you know, straight up. If you want to start doing cold showers, start in May or June, because what you think is a cold shower is not really a cold shower. It's quite warm, as you discover in October and November as the groundwater gets colder. I, by chance, just started doing that in May, 18 months ago, nearly 2 years ago. And start with your feet, work your way up slowly, and do it that way. And then September, October, November, degree by degree, the water gets colder and colder, and then you find out actually in May and June it wasn't that cold. There's no He-Man, there's no testosterone thing about this, there's no sort of like, aren't I strong? It's just, I feel better. I guess you should. It isn't something you should do if you've got a weakness in your heart or something like that. I mean, should probably check that you're in a good situation to be able to do that. You know, go and talk to a doctor. I don't know. that's what they always say with disclaimers, isn't it? I don't mean that. It's like, I started very carefully and very slowly, and you know, cold shower, be careful. And also never get into cold water without someone watching you. Because it's amazing how things turn out. I was at a party last Christmas in Copenhagen with a cold water researcher. And yes, a doctor who researches cold water. And he said, go up to here and you're okay. Don't jump in. Go up to here, it's okay. That's the sympathetic nervous system. If you put your head in, it's the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system, and all the wires get crossed and things can go severely wrong. Also, if it's really cold, you can get kind of cramps in your legs and you're not going to faint, but you can't climb out. So always have someone watching you. So it's, I guess, with my fitness, with that side of the fitness, I realized, as I said, I'm approaching 60. In fact, it's not approaching, it's right in front of me. And I have no intention of retiring, not because I'm a workaholic, or I just love what I do. You know, maybe I'll do less, but I will work as long as I can. Unfortunately, here in Switzerland, they kick you out at 65 from teaching, which is, it's a shame, really, because, you know, you work all your life to become a good teacher, and I feel now if someone comes and studies me, I'm probably going to make a decent job of it, you know. And then it's like, okay, out you go. Let's bring someone else in who doesn't know what they're doing, age 25 or 30 or whatever, and let them learn. So it's a bit of a shame. I will continue to do that in other places, but here it will almost certainly come to a close. I still live here. So if I'm going to carry on traveling and conducting and playing solos, I need to be kind of in good shape to do that. Otherwise, even just carrying suitcases around airports and traveling, you know, will become a bit of a drag. So that's why, you know, I'm in good shape. So that's the fitness side of it. Dennis Wick always used to talk about, you know, the fitness, you know, swimming a lot to work on your breathing. And I guess there is a benefit to that. I feel my breathing's pretty good, I have to say. I feel it's improving. So all of that said, I do that, all of the fitness stuff, if you want to leave the cold water out, I understand. But I do all of the fitness stuff because it's a fitness routine that suits me. I don't injure myself. I'm not naturally built for running an hour and a half, a marathon or anything, but I can do some sprints and, you know, a bit of weights and a bit of elliptical stuff. So my blood pressure's okay. And you know. I do that because I feel good. I enjoy it. It makes me feel happy, which is the reason to do anything, isn't it? Makes me happy. I play the trombone because it makes me happy. It's all this dopamine release thing, I suppose. And so that's that side of it. The diet is very important. I would say I'm vegan probably 3 or 4 days of the week. Don't get me wrong, I'll eat a steak. But vegan, and I'm vegan because I like the food. 3 or 4 days a week. I'm not vegan. I eat vegan 3 or 4 days of the week. That doesn't make me vegan. I eat vegan food. And I make my own Danish sourdough bread. And I have this amazing mixture with peanut butter and tahini and honey, which is just like the elixir of life. Kind of a calorie bomb, you know, and you don't eat too much of it and you feel really satisfied. And it's like you eat and you think, this has got to be really bad for me. But it's not. If you get good quality peanut butter and tahini, and, you know, it's really good stuff for you. And if you're going to eat anything sweet, honey's probably the thing to do. So I do that, and because I feel good, I have more energy. I'm happier. But then we got to look at the other aspects of, you know, Alcohol is no good for you, but do I feel happy after I've drunk a really wonderful glass or two of really fine wine? Yeah, I do. That's a great buzz as well. And I love cooking. I grow most of my own vegetables. I grow most of our own vegetables. And it's amazing, isn't it? Life in the obsessive household. It's called not doing anything by half, I suppose. You know, it's like, drop my own sourdough bread. I'm always doing no time. I grow my own vegetables, you know. And so all of the dietary things and the fitness, and I've been through everything. I don't recommend any of this to you. If you learn anything from this, it's find out what works for you. But it's not okay to live on fast food. It's not okay to eat crap. I don't care what the health authorities say that it's okay to eat, you name it, fast food restaurants. It's not. It's not okay. And animals have probably been harmed very badly in the process. Just going a little bit off. You know, you can buy a chicken for like £4. Shouldn't be possible. I don't, it shouldn't be possible to do that. Anyway, you know, if you're raising one a chicken healthily, you know, anyway, I digress. So all of this is to say to you, you have to take this into account. Dave, for the students, practicing isn't enough. Being conscientious isn't enough. We're athletes. This is a physical business. Carrying suitcases around, operating, you know, the heaviest instrument, in the case of bass drum one, I think that's totally suspended, you know, without any support. The breathing, the mental health aspect of it. What have I said about this? Find out what makes you feel good. You might think sitting on the on the settee watching Netflix and eating Mars bars and whatever makes you feel good, but it's only short term. It's a short term fix. Hey, who doesn't like doing that? But yeah, we've got to do what we can do. It's part of you practice your scales. You work on your musical aspects, all of the technical stuff, and you, in some cases, you spend a lot of money to go and study in a certain place. We should be putting ourselves in the best physical condition as well, because not necessarily just because we're athletes or whatever, but because it does have that effect on our mental health. It just makes you feel good. Now, if I've made you feel guilty, for goodness sake, don't go and put your training shoes on and go start and trying to run if you haven't been doing it. It's a gradual change. You know, your diet. Make changes gradually. And I could, like I said, I could go into more detail about my diet, and particularly my diet leading up to concerts. In fact, I might have done on a previous podcast. But find out what works for you, and you have to do something like that. I think also with such a high pressure job, if you like, because I have a job, I'm a musician, I'm a trombone player, I'm an entertainer. And students have a job as well, they're professional students. It's a job. It's not something you do on the side. And so we need to look at all the different aspects of that and do it as well as we possibly can. And it's high pressured. When I stand up in front of an audience, I'd be lying if I said it wasn't scary sometimes. It is scary. You know, I've done things on nerves on this podcast before, but I think a couple of times in my life I've actually experienced terror, pure terror. Waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning with my heart thumping out of my chest, realizing that day I was going to have to play this, that, or the other piece. It's not happened that many times, but it has happened. And it's always the lead up to it that's worse than the event itself. You know, by the time, I mean, if you see that Bolero video, you know, with me playing Bolero with Dudamel on some YouTube everywhere, I was in absolute terror. And then like 30 seconds before the solo, it's like, right, bang, you know, and it's a stretch. It affects us all differently, but it is stressful. With us, you know, it's like on Sunday, I have a recital in Spain, and then I'm conducting and playing a concerto there, and then I fly to York and I'm playing some solos there, and it just keeps coming. So it has its stress, so I need to be physically in shape. And but students, you're in a precarious position. I have so much sympathy for students in that it's scary. If you go and train to be a lawyer, you're probably going to be a lawyer. If you go and train to be a doctor, guess what? You're probably going to be a doctor. If you go and study to become an orchestral chanson player, what are the chances? Depending on the class you're in, there are no guarantees, are there? Really. And so it's a scary situation. It has its stress. And I think the release of, you know, getting some cardio and, you know, feeling good about yourself because you've moved. You've got the blood moving a little bit. And, you know, I think that's an important factor for it as well. You know, it's like you might have had a tough practice day or whatever, you know, and just that release of, who knows, go and play badminton with somebody, go and play squash, but move, you know, get moving. It took me years to realise that I wasn't a jogger. I can't jog. I can sprint. And I tried to jog, but it wasn't my kind of thing at all. Anyway, I ramble. We have to do something for our fitness. And, you know, once you get over... I think everybody should have a blood pressure machine. You need to keep your eye on that. That's not a good thing, you know, if your blood pressure is too high. Although interpretations of what too high is varies around the world. Here in Europe, they'll say, you know, go up to 140 over 80, and in America, it's go and go over 120. So, you know, obviously the lower it is, as long as it doesn't go the other way, as long as, you know, 120 is better than 140, obviously. But look at that kind of thing. Get health checks. And I don't think it's ever too young to check your blood pressure, you know. And, yeah. So, Dave, I've thrown a lot of stuff on the table there, but it's a great subject. Thank you so much for bringing that up. I do talk to my students about it, and it's amazing the effect that a teacher can have on a class. You know, when I notice now far more of my students go to the gym now than they go to the fitness studio. And... we are a role model in many ways. So, good, Dave, great. Now, let's move on. I have another one here, which is from Nick Scholl, an old stalwart of the podcast of old. Nick, how are you? Now, this is a bit of a tricky one, really. A bit of a sensitive one, perhaps. How do we keep going day by day amongst all the setbacks? Now, Nick, this is really non-specific, so we're going to have to interpret setback in different ways. Let's look at the setbacks from the two perspectives that I can think of immediately. Let's look at the setbacks. How do we keep going? Is it what it is? How do we keep going? Nick, I can only address this from a trombone player's point of view, from a musician's point of view. And I guess I can give you my personal side of it as well. Everybody has setbacks. I had one today, actually. It was... It's tough to take. We're looking to buy a chalet in the Alps, and the bank wasn't sure about lending me some money because of my age. This! Don't worry about me. Finances are fine. It's okay. But that's the first time. Nick, you know what? That's the proverbial bucket of cold water straight in your face. We don't think we can back you anymore, you're old. And I have to say it did hit me. How do I cope with that? You know what? I work and I fight. I get up in the morning, I work. That's just kind of how I am. We keep going. And we keep doing our best. But yeah. That was tough. There have been far worse. This is what serious first world problems, you know. Nick, yeah, I've had my life setbacks. I'm very happily married for the third time, very happily married, and very enriching. But as you can tell, it hasn't always been that easy. And you question yourself and you doubt yourself. And you go through some pretty tough times. But Nick, every time I close that door and pick up one of these, that's all gone. This is my refuge. This is my safe place. This is where good things happen. Do you know what, Nick? When I breathe in and blow through that, noise comes out. It's really cool. When you were a little kid, someone gave you a trombone, you blew down it and a noise came out. You thought it was the coolest thing ever. I've never lost that. I pick up an instrument. You know, there can be all manner of crap on the other side of that door, dealing with bloody administrations, bureaucracy, people throwing marbles under your feet the whole time. I'm sure people are just employed to make other people's lives difficult sometimes. That's like part of the deal. Most think it's in their contract. You think there must be a simpler way of doing things. Once I did something in a university in France, and they said I could either travel by train or drive myself there. And I said, well, I'll drive, you know. And they said, well, we'll give you a mileage. We'll pay you a certain amount of money per mile from your home to here. But you must bring the original ownership documents that proves that you are the owner of that car. Not a photocopy, the original document, otherwise we won't pay you anything. That was 10 years ago. But you look at things like that and you think, surely there's an easier way. Anyway, so that's just life frustrations. And you come in the room and you breathe and you go, and it's all gone. I show my students in like warm-ups and how to breathe and release the air. Breathing. Right there, I forgot you were there. And it happens when it's just. You're not there. I mean that breath. And that is how I keep going with setbacks in life. By the way, see that breath I took then, and how I actually managed to shut the whole world out with it. there's an amazing book called Breath by James Nestor. I think I might have one of these. James Nestor, Breath. Read it, change your life. A student at the Royal Academy, a very wonderful young lady, bought it for me, gave it to me as a present. 18-year-old girl said, I think you might like this. Life-changing. Life-changing. Don't say that lightly. Really life-changing. Setbacks, that's dealing with setbacks outside of the practice room. What do we do when we have setbacks with our play? You know, I have, as I keep saying, wonderful students. And I'm in that room when they come back and tell me again they went out in the first round again in an audition. Out, out, out. Setback after setback. And the only thing I can hold on to is the fact that I kind of know what I'm listening to and I know what I'm doing now. And to clearly identify perhaps the factors that with them that they might need to work on, they might need to fix. And a lot of that is to do with their approach to the instrument, their positivity and the performance they're going to give. With a couple perhaps of technical issues that they might need to look at. But that's looking at it very practically. I think, you know, we get out of bed in the morning trying to be the best human being we can be. We continue all day long trying to do that. And then we go to bed at night. And we've tried to be the best human being we can be all day. And Nick, you know that trumpet player, Maurice Murphy, the really famous one, who was in the London Symphony, was there. The most talented trumpet player I ever worked with. I miss him. I really miss him. I miss the look in his eye. I miss those blue eyes. I miss the twinkle in his eyes. I miss the laugh. I miss the humour. I miss who he was. There's a Walt Whitman poem that ends, in the end, all that remains are personal qualities. And at the end of the day, whatever we achieve, whatever money we make, whatever car we drive, all that we'll be remembered for is who we are. And don't lose sight of who you are. We can all have a bad day or a bad week or a bad month or a bad year on the trombone, but it doesn't change who you are. We try to be the best trombone player we can possibly be. We try to be the best musician we can possibly be. And, you know, it's all of, we fail all of the time. And, it's about who you are. It's about your attitude. I work. I keep going. If needs be, I fight. But I hope not to. And I try to be a good person. I try and help people. And I have problems in my playing that have been there since I was 14 years old. And I think if it makes anybody feel better, you know, if you think you can come to me, I'm pretty good at teaching now. If you think you're going to come to me, I'm going to take your problems away, it's not going to happen. It doesn't matter who you go to. There'll always be one or two stubborn problems that just aren't going to go. We all have them. We all have those Achilles heels that are just there. All someone like me can do is first, to make you feel better about them. And second, maybe give you some tools to find your way around them. But I can't take them away. They're going to be there. And so you have to accept that when you're practicing, some of those problems are not going to go. Patience is work without expectation of result. That's why I learnt my work ethic, because after 4 decades of trying to fix the same problem, you know, I'm going to get up tomorrow, I'm going to try again, and the day after, and I'll keep going until there's no more breath in my lungs. I don't expect to fix it, but I'm going to keep trying. And I'm not defeatist about it. It's just after 4 decades, it's got better, much better. And I found different strategies, but the actual core issue, and we all have them. If I was a little unprofessional here, I could go around all of your favorite trombone players and tell you exactly what they can't do. But I wouldn't be so indiscreet. That's for them to tell you. So setbacks in the practice room, it's about who you are. It's about the good person that you are, and you just work and you do what you know to be right. The other thing with setbacks in the practice room or professionally is to remind ourselves of why we do this. You know, I say to everybody, you know, there'll be some thorny issues, there'll be some difficult aspects that you're trying to fix in your playing, and you don't feel like you're getting anywhere. You're trying this etude or this exercise, and you're trying to improve this, you're trying to improve that. 50% of your practice, you do that. That's very conscientious. 50% of your practice. Remind yourself of why you're doing this. It's because you love it. Play music, play a tune, pick a piece of music and play it through. And who gives a damn what happens from the beginning to the end? Just enjoy it. We have to practice transmitting the joy of music and the love of what we do. If you're always going into a workroom going, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, fix this, you've got to do this, what are you going to do? There's no hope. It's a downward spiral. It's going to be, you know, and we've all been there. There was, with this issue that I have, when I was about 35, I had a month off work. I said, this is all I'm going to practice. By the end of this month, it will be gone. And after about 5 days, all I wanted to do was bend my trombone in half and throw it in the bin. There's only so much of it you can take. So that would be my advice. So there's the problems outside of that door and the problems on the inside of this door. And I'm really, really very grateful to Nick and to Dave for both of these subjects that they've brought up. And I hope you found that response interesting. I guess the moral of the podcast is only do things to make yourself happy. Not at anybody else's expense, of course, but, you know, it's like, do your fitness, find your diet, make yourself feel good about yourself, feel good about your physical shape, get some movement. And remember, it's about your personal qualities. Come into a practice room to escape the niggling frustrations of bureaucratic life. And enjoy your playing. Talk to you again soon.